Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. Perennially, the state of New Mexico can be found at the bottom of lists ranking education, performance, and policy. In a stated attempt to improve New Mexico's standing in the education realm, New Mexico's Public Education Department, or PED, has implemented an educator effectiveness system, quote, designed to establish a framework for continuous improvement and professional growth for teachers and principals, which, in turn, will promote student success, unquote. At the heart of the system are teacher evaluations. These evaluations, with their heavy reliance on testing, are both supported and questioned, if not denounced. Joining me today to take a long look at the evaluations and testing requirements are Dr. Ellen Bernstein, president of the Albuquerque Teachers Federation, who joins me in the studio, and Aztec New Mexico School Superintendent Kirk Carpenter, who joins me by phone from Aztec. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Joining us at the bottom of the hour, also by phone, will be State Senator Gay Kernan, a Republican from Hobbs, New Mexico, and a member of both the Legislative Education Study Committee and the Senate Education Committee. I want to let our listeners know, before we begin, over the last month at least, we have attempted to secure the participation of Public Education Department Secretary-Designate Hannah Scandera in this on-air conversation. There was a time several weeks ago when her spokesperson thought she most likely would be able to appear on an earlier show, but her schedule and availability changed. At the end of last week, we again extended an invitation to her to participate. We were told yesterday that her schedule would not permit it. We would have liked to have her join us in this conversation. We thought the conversation important enough to have, though, given community interest and concern in the issues, that we moved ahead, and we are joined today by guests who can ably and knowledgeably address the issues. So thank you again for being here. So, Ellen Bernstein, let's start with you. When I visited the website of the Albuquerque Teachers Federation, the union of which you are president, the first thing I saw was an announcement celebrating Take It Back Day and a call to wear black to mark the occasion yesterday on November 20th and to, quote, reclaim the promise, unquote. Tell us why this reclamation was thought to be necessary.
This week is American Education Week, and we thought, given the state, the mood in the schools, the fact that teachers feel demoralized, they feel that this over-reliance on testing to evaluate their ability as a teacher, they feel incredible stress. Teachers are leaving the classroom saying, this is not what I signed up for. And the people that are in the classroom right now feel like instead of focusing on teaching and learning, they're focusing on uploading data into a system that is very cumbersome and not working. And they need something. They need to feel like they can regain some pride in their profession. They can regain a sense of joy in teaching and learning. And we thought, since it's American Education Week, let's take it back. Let's have something that is positive and makes people feel like they have some way to say they're proud to be a teacher, they're a good teacher, they want to keep teaching, and they're going to take that feeling back.
So a morale boost.
Yeah, and a statement. And a statement that we're here, we're continuing to teach every single day, we're doing our absolute best, given the fact that there are incredible mandates piled on every single day, paperwork and accountability factors and scrutiny and public shame and blame about how the teachers are totally responsible for everything that goes on in public education, when in fact, they're totally accountable for everything that goes on in their classroom. And so we just wanted to give them a chance to say, I'm a good teacher and I'm proud of it.
Well, we'll find out about Aztec from Superintendent Carpenter in a minute, but are you aware, was this going on in other parts of the state or just Albuquerque?
No, this was a statewide effort. Both the National Education Association and my union, AFT New Mexico, and all the locals around the state had events going on. Some people were just in their schools wearing black and taking pictures of what people were taking back. And then some people were having actual protests and informational pickets around the state. So there's a lot going on.
Well, Superintendent Carpenter, how did teachers celebrate American Education Week in Aztec? Was there a similar event to Take It Back Day?
I know that there was a similar event that was really separate from our district. It was actually a group that Aztec Kids First helped coordinate along with that. I honestly don't know how many may have participated. I was actually traveling yesterday to a superintendent's meeting in Albuquerque, but I do know that they were trying to rally the forces for some of the very same things and for some of the very same reasons that were just mentioned. So absolutely it did happen up here. As to, again, the impact or the actual number, I don't have that information.
Okay. Well, I reached out to you as a member of the New Mexico Teach Advisory Council. If you would, help us to understand, please, the function of the council and how you are involved.
The function of the council, which really is, it's made up of many different people, everything from we have union representation, we have charter school representation, there are three superintendents on it, there are principals, there are teachers, we even have higher education on the committee. We have even some other CEO-type people from different districts. So it's got a whole host of educational faces with different functions within their districts. And really the implementation of this system was what our committee was really charged with, and trying to give recommendations on different pieces of the overall implementation of the new teacher evaluation system. That included some school districts piloting the system. We had about 68 schools last year, I believe, that actually piloted a portion of this system, not the TeachScape side, which I refer to more. That's where all the documents have to be uploaded, but really looking at the rubrics that are used for the observations, and in my opinion, the most important piece of this whole new system is the observation piece, because that's the real-time change that you can create in a classroom. And so our committee was in charge of some of that. I will tell you, as a side note, that Aztec Municipal Schools was one of three districts that actually we piloted the new observation domains last year district-wide. So aside from being on the committee and also being a part of that, we've had some vast experience in some of the new evaluation system.
Well, what is the feedback you are hearing about the new evaluation system from your teachers in Aztec?
I think it's past the point of confusion, and it's gone to a point of fear in some respects, because they can't see what it really is going to look like. You know, we've been very informative to them as far as the different parts, and that student achievement's going to make up 50%, and observations of domains 2 and 3, 25, and multiple measures another 25%, and we've kept them updated on that. I feel very fortunate in our district that we were able to get out the domains and work with our teachers last year, because it was a pilot. We still used that information. We crosswalked it with what we had to use last year. And for that reason, our teachers are at a different level. But I will tell you that there is a lot of frustration. And I will also say openly that, and it's no secret, that I've been the voice of, if we're going to implement the system, let's do it in steps. And when I say that, the idea was this year, let's utilize the domains. Let's use the observations. Let's train our principals. Let's give our teachers the best we can to make them aware of what these domains, what these rubrics really look like, because it's completely different than what we've done in the past. There's no perfect system. I will tell you that this system, the observation piece, I think has good merit. It gives teachers opportunities to at least to see how they can improve. And then let's next year implement what I think is causing the most frustration from what I hear around the state, and that's all the documentation. Including principals.
Well, I take it then it wasn't implemented in steps?
No, it was piloted, and the domains were piloted. There was absolutely good feedback given. There were some adjustments made with all the rubrics. But the full implementation is happening this year. And the part of the issue, and again, I'm not shy about being the person that has stood up and asked in person to the secretary and other during our committee meetings, and been supported by many committee members to say, we have to slow this train down. We have to slow it down. If we're going to really make some impactful change, and we're going to change education in New Mexico, then we have to do it with what we're doing in the classroom. And unfortunately, what's getting lost there in many respects is the burden of not understanding the rest of the system that, in my opinion, it's become very distracting for our staff. And trying to implement this in steps was a proposal that I've sent to the PED and said, please consider doing the observation, the protocols, the domains this year, and let's bring in the rest of the system next year. Let's use some districts to pilot that side of it, and let's use some people to inform the system so we can work out the kinks, bring the student data into that, and let's really look at it and make sure all the measurements for this baseline year are accurate. And that's concerning because this is a baseline year, so we're going to baseline scores for teachers and effectiveness ratings, but, you know, there's a lot to do, and there's still a lot to be done, and honestly, there's a lot of the system that, that teachers have not seen. If we wanted to show them their summative evaluation form right now, it doesn't exist yet. The business rules that define it do exist, but to sit down with the teacher, you know, they too want to see, okay, what am I going to be assessed by? It's going to be a 200-point system. So how do all those points get tallied up? What do I have to do to be an effective teacher? And as we speak today, what I can't tell you is that you have to have this many points out of 200 to be considered effective, or this many to be considered highly effective, or this many to be exemplary. Or the other way, if we want to go to the left, which we absolutely don't want to do, and move to the side of minimally effective and ineffective. So a lot of those things, I think with change, people want some control and they want clarity.
Well, Ellen Bernstein, I know you want to comment. I do want to say that if you would like to join in our discussion about teacher evaluations, testing, and education, there are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may post comments on the Call In Show webpage at kunm.org, or you may call our local number 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866 with questions and comments. Tell us, is a new system of teacher evaluation a good way to improve our education system in New Mexico? Ellen Bernstein, you want to go ahead and comment to some of Superintendent Carpenter's remarks?
I would. Thank you. And I agree with a lot of what the superintendent said. I believe, and I have for several decades, that a really good, well-researched, and well-implemented teacher evaluation system can indeed improve education in any state. The issues for this are well-researched and well-implemented. So I want to talk about the teacher observation part that the superintendent mentioned for just a moment. Most teacher evaluation systems up until recently have been 100% based on a principal observing a teacher and giving them feedback about their teaching. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, there's a lot of research that says that that's the most important part to improving a teacher's practice, is that kind of feedback and that important conversation. So the move right now is to move to multiple measures, having observation be a part of a teacher's evaluation, but not the whole thing. We agree as teachers that there can be many different ways to provide feedback, and multiple measures, that's a good thing. The question is, what are those measures? So again, let's talk about the 25% of this system in New Mexico based on observations. What the PED did was they used Charlotte Danielson's book called A Framework for Teaching, and it's a well-researched, often used book all around the nation. I respect her work. And what she's done in her work is she has studied the act of teaching, put it into four domains, and then described those domains over like a developmental continuum. What does a basic teacher look like? What does a proficient teacher and a very advanced teacher look like? And also, what does an unsatisfactory teacher look like? And I've promoted her work and tried to get it implemented both in this district and in this state for many, many years because it's such solid work, such good research on the act of teaching, and it allows a teacher and a principal to have a great conversation about what it is they are doing and what it is they aren't doing and how they can advance. The issue with what has happened with the PED's work is they took Charlotte's great work and then they changed it. They changed the descriptors, and they took a lot of validity out of the work. And then they added a fifth column, which doesn't even have to do with the teacher's teaching. It has to do with work outside of the classroom primarily. And so instead of a well-researched tool, implementing something that states all over the nation have been using, they changed it. And they changed it in a way that makes it a less useful tool. So that's 25%. And then the other part of multiple measures, there's a lot of research about what really works in teachers' evaluations, what really helps a teacher improve, what really helps identify teachers who are struggling. But instead of using that research, they based 50% of a teacher's evaluation on high-stakes testing, multiple kinds of testing, but it's all very high stakes. And in fact, these observations are very high stakes. So instead of getting useful feedback as a teacher, I'm nervous. I am just dying. I've got to upload all this evidence. I've got to take time away from planning and preparing to do all of this stuff to upload on TeachScape in the hopes that my principal, with this one high stakes observation or these three high stakes observation, will let me continue with my career without punishing me for the one area that I may need to improve in. And it's just creating, as the superintendent said, an enormous amount of fear and anxiety. And you know, fear and anxiety is contagious. We don't want principals passing that on to teachers, and we don't want teachers passing that around to the kids. And they're trying not to, but they're so anxious.
Well, and I think the community is sensing that fear now. I do want to let you know we're talking today about education issues, teacher evaluations, testing. And I'm joined in the studio by Dr. Ellen Bernstein. She's the president of the Albuquerque Teachers Federation. And on the telephone with me is Aztec New Mexico School Superintendent Kirk Cameron. And Carpenter, I apologize. And we are going to take a short break. And when we get back, we'll move to more comments from our guests, certainly, but also your email and telephone comments and questions.
Support comes from Cards by Miriam Hall, providing locally photographed nature calendars, available at many stores, including Whole Foods, La Montanita, Beeps, and Bookworks. More at Miriam Hall Photography, blackspot.com.
On the next Making Contact.
Nuclear power by definition is an uncontrolled reaction, and when you lose control, it's just like a jailbreak and all hell breaks out.
On this edition, we hear excerpts from the film The Atomic States of America. It chronicles a rise of nuclear energy, the high price we've paid for it, and how the U.S. is pushing to redefine nuclear and bring power plants back online.
Friday morning at 8 on 89.9 KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo. We're talking today about education issues. And as you might imagine, we have a number of comments and calls coming in. I'd like to go ahead and read the first email comment. It's from Bianca Mendoza. She teaches first and second grade. She is concerned that 50% of her teacher evaluation depends on standardized test results that aren't administered to children when they are in first and second grade. She says she receives part of her evaluation based on the entire school's grade, and feels this doesn't properly reflect her performance. She is also concerned about impacts on students with developmental disabilities and their teachers. Let's go ahead and take our first call. It's Diane from Albuquerque. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning. I agree with what the superintendent said, that it should be steps instead of full implementation. And I agree with what Dr. Bernstein said, that teachers are very nervous about this, that they feel like 50% of their observation is based on student evaluation. And those student evaluations are based on mostly on end-of-course exams. These end-of-course exams are something that's new. And they are tests written by we don't know who, and they are not vetted tests. They have not been tests that have been checked for cultural accuracy or anything. And those tests are given to students, and they may not even be based on what the students have been studying.
All right. Thank you so much for your call this morning, Diane. When I first read a document that came to my desk early on from Albuquerque Public School District, it said the tests were going to be developed by PED, Public Education Department. Is that, in fact, what happened, Ellen Bernstein?
It's my understanding with the end-of-course exams that the PED developed them in consultation with some teachers, but the teachers that worked with the PED on some of these tests have told me that a lot of their input has not been considered. In the pilot of some of these end-of-course exams in the high school level last year, teachers complained that there were inaccuracies, that they didn't match the course that they were actually teaching. But more importantly, I want to point out something about the comment you read and the caller that just spoke.
Please do.
Every single day, we get different and new information from the PED about what is and what is not going to count for different teachers in different grades and subjects. It is so confusing. We know, based on the rule, and again, this is not a law, this is just an imposed rule. We know that 50% of a teacher's evaluation is based on some sort of high-stakes test with some sort of statistical model of value added, and we probably won't go there today, imposed on the test scores. But every single day, it's a different story. It's on your school's grade, which is based primarily on test scores and high-stakes testing with the standardized test, or it's not on the school's grade. It's on the end-of-course exam, but now we don't have a beginning and we don't have data to compare it to, so we might not have the end-of-course exams count. We might have the interim assessments count, but how is that being judged? And like the superintendent said, how many points – and based on what? So basically, you've got 23,000 teachers, and I don't even know how many principals, whose evaluation, 50% of it, is based on something that is confusing, constantly changing, and and not understood by anybody, including the PED, who keeps changing their answers.
Well, Superintendent Carpenter, I did want to ask you. I mean, you advocated for this process to roll out in steps, and it did not. So what do we do now? I mean, the President Obama took a step back on the Affordable Care Act when that was not working properly. Is there a chance that there might be a step back and a roll back and, okay, let's breathe a little bit and see what happens?
I don't believe so. And I say that because, I can go back a year plus where during our pilot, I recommended that we implement steps. And for the very reason that I felt like we were really true practitioners are just one small part of this. And, you know, the observations and even advocating that, can we consider observations as 50%? Student achievement has a place, but we need to figure out a lot of things before it has a place. And I think of the high-stakes testing in many respects, and not to be morbid, but it's almost an autopsy because it's information that's done at the end of a year when all the learning has taken place. And let's be honest, taking that information, there's things you can glean from it, but to directly take that information back and help students, it's difficult. You can look at teaching and maybe inform teaching of some different things you might be seeing across the school. But when you think about the observation piece, and not just the actual formal observations, but all the walkthroughs, we need to free up time for our principals to be instructional leaders. And the only way they can be the true instructional leader is being in the classroom. And when we're tying them up with a lot of things, paperwork and things that they have to do with the new system, and it's taking a long time. I mean, we've had principals say that, you know, it may be 25 minutes in a classroom, but you're spending over 2 hours per observation because of what's required. I have no doubt that that will get better and will get more efficient. But the point is that the biggest piece and the biggest change is to make the real-time change. And the only way to do that is to be in the classroom, give feedback, and give a teacher the opportunity to say, here's what you need to do to improve, not because principals are all experts, but because they do see a lot of instructional practices. They can assign them to resources to improve. And so all the conversation, even that I've had, has been along those terms. And so, again, I think the interim assessments, whatever is going to be used, it's those types of questions, and for the very reason that I did say, let's pilot some of this. Let's figure all this out. So as we start next year, you know, we're not going to figure everything out, but we'll have a lot more figured out as to how things are going to play in, how they need to play in, and then let's start with the rest of the system. A lot of states have done what we're doing in many respects. The difference has been their implementation timelines have been longer, and we're not advocating to slow progress because progress is being made by utilizing the new observation stuff. And the committee worked hard with the Danielson framework. We did have to go to five indicator levels, and we did all we could to keep the integrity of it. There's been people from UCLA that checked it and tried to say, yes, this is good. I mean, it's not perfect. And I agree. I think there's any time you stretch something out that has four indicator levels to five, you can dilute some things. But, I mean, the committee has worked very hard to try to maintain all of that. And, again, that being the most important piece, unfortunately, for and causing most of the work is worth 25% when it's the day-to-day interaction that teachers have that is so valuable. And yet, when their evaluation comes out, it's going to be about 25% of their overall score. So it's been difficult, and I don't see it changing.
Well, our phone lines are full. Let's go ahead and bring our next caller, Kara, from Albuquerque, into our conversation. Good morning, Kara.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to kind of elaborate a little bit on the teacher evaluations as well. Both my husband and my mother are teachers right now, one in Rio Rancho and one in Albuquerque. And some of the stuff that's been brought up about them is definitely true. Teachers have no idea what's going on right now. It seems like they get different information almost weekly on what exams they have to give or what grade is going to be tested where. And for my husband, as a high school chemistry teacher, the final exam, they have no idea what it's even going to be yet, if they have to give the end of course one, or the schools were allowed to submit ones, but they don't know when the approval is going to happen. They can't proctor their own exams. They can't grade their own exams. It's just a very confusing, weird situation that basically makes it seem like teachers aren't, they can't be the authority in their classroom. Apparently someone else knows better and should be the one that determines all of this stuff for them. But there's a lot of problems with the evaluations just on the basis of standardized testing is probably not the best way of testing how well students are learning anyway, especially high-stakes testing. And there's so many other factors that go into student achievement. Effective teachers, of course, but one of the things about classrooms is that all of the problems of society come into your classroom in the form of these little kids that, you know, don't necessarily have any say in their home circumstances or in, you know, where they're from, but all of that gets fed into the things that teachers deal with in their classrooms, and that's going to affect achievement, and that really isn't something that is the teacher's fault. And I think one of the biggest things for both my husband and my mother, what they've said is that the reason they would give a test or the reason they give exams is to see where their students aren't quite understanding what they're teaching or where, you know, where they need to be focusing their teaching efforts. But right now, most of the exams, especially the state-mandated ones, they get by the time the students have already moved on to another grade. So it's incredibly useless in helping them figure out how their students did or who improved or how they could continue to help them. So the whole design is not really set up to benefit teachers or to improve their teaching, and definitely not to benefit students.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Kara. You wanted to comment, Ellen?
Yeah. What she just said, as the spouse and daughter of teachers, is what teachers all over the United States, and in particular this state, are saying. And I want to make it clear, teachers are ready to be accountable for the outcomes of their work. We're not afraid of that. And it's okay to include in an evaluation system the outcomes of our work. What have students learned as a result of our teaching? The issue with assessments, especially off-the-shelf assessments and ones that are developed on the cheap and are multiple choice and easily given in mass, is that they have no instructional sensitivity. There's not a piece of research, and anybody who's listening is welcome to show me research that I haven't seen, if there is any, that shows that any of these tests are actually able to judge the ability of a teacher. Some tests do a little bit in terms of what a student knows and is able to do. Teacher-created assessments, like she said, really give teachers a lot of information about what their students know and are able to do so that we can constantly adjust our teaching. But there's no instructional sensitivity in a standardized test. And so they're not measuring my teaching. They're measuring, like the caller said, multiple factors in a child's life, but not necessarily whether I'm a competent teacher.
I want to let our listeners know that we invited Public Education Department Secretary-designate Hannah Scandera onto the program multiple times. We were attempting to schedule it over the last month, but we found out yesterday she was unavailable for this program. We would have liked to have included her in the conversation, but we considered it important enough with community concerns and interest to go ahead and bring our other knowledgeable guests on and have this conversation. So thank you for that. I want to get to an email comment because this was something I was concerned about. about when I looked at the testing issue and how much is dependent upon it. And it's the roots of our education problem here in New Mexico. Jan called, but she couldn't hold. She points out that students in poverty who have difficult home situations have trouble in school, and that this isn't the teacher's fault. So, Superintendent Carpenter, was there discussion about the amount of weight that was being placed on testing, but things that were really out of the teacher's control?
There was discussion, and I think part of the discussion was the very same things that the callers have said, and as Bernstein has indicated. I mean, we do have different kids that come into our buildings, and no teacher is afraid of accountability, but every district is different, and a standardized test that we take here in Aztec, we have different factors than Albuquerque. And Albuquerque has different factors than those kids maybe in Laguna, Acoma, wherever they may be. And so part of the answer to that is this whole idea of trying to develop value-added measures, which is very, very complicated. It goes into different ways of figuring grades, school grades, and accounting for the different demographic situations or economic situation that students may walk into a classroom with. So that has been the biggest discussion, but that's also been the answer to say that's why we have value-added measures, so that we can account for those types of things. And I will tell you, honestly, as a superintendent, I don't fully understand that, and I really couldn't explain it other than just what I just mentioned, because it's a very, very complicated calculation that has to take place, and that's being calculated on the 300,000 students across the state, or how many ever might be testing. Obviously, not all 300,000 are, because some kids don't test on standards-based at earlier grades. So it's just a very complicated issue.
And Ellen Bernstein, a quick comment before we go to our next call.
Everybody knows, and there's an incredible amount of research that validates the effects of poverty on learning. Countries that have really made a difference in their educational system have addressed equity, meaning poverty, as well as education. And they did it in tandem. We in this country, and most importantly in this state, with our high poverty rates and our childhood hunger rates, really have to pay attention to both. Teachers are not making excuses like we're accused of doing when we point out that poverty matters, because it does.
My children attend a relatively affluent school here in Albuquerque and Nob Hill, and yet when I go in and help, sometimes kids tell me stories about not having eaten dinner or sleeping in their car. And so there's, even within schools that appear to be affluent, there are those issues as well. Let's go ahead and take our next caller. It's Mike. He's been on hold for a while. And Mike, you'd like to comment, please.
Yeah, I live with a elementary school teacher in a Title I school. And I cannot tell you how this is just fundamentally destroying our lives. This is mean-spirited and punitive. Ellen hasn't talked about the sick leave issue, how they're using that against teachers. And everything is set up. This is uniquely set up to punish teachers who teach at, you know, poor schools. That's what this is. This is a political attack. Mm-hmm. It has very little to do with education. That's why the superintendent, his request for it to be put off, was not honored. It is political. These are attacks on teachers. They want to destroy the profession.
Mike, isn't there a stipend for teachers who choose to teach at lower graded schools?
No. There's a one-time, if you'll transfer from a successful school, or what they grade, is these schools are not failing. These schools are labeled as failing. Mm-hmm. There's a one-time thing. She's got 13 people that did it or something like that. Any new teacher, the first thing they need to do is avoid a poor school, a Title I school. They need to run from those things because, what is it? I just saw a message, 30%, Ellen hasn't talked about the learning plan. This is another, program. This is another punitive effort. If a teacher gets scored below a 3 out of 6, but they don't really give sixes or fives. So if a teacher gets scored below that, they are put on a plan. And based on that, you know, it's meant to demean, it's meant to insult, it's meant to destroy the profession of teaching. That is what this is about. This is all tied up with Teach for America. She Scandera wants teacher turnover. She has made it very clear, if you read her writings, that a 2 years is enough for a teacher. She thinks it's normal and healthy. Those are her words, not mine. This is political. This is Martinez paying off the Koch brothers, paying off the Chamber of Commerce, paying off all these organizations that want to turn teaching into, you know, a rote model. Anybody that's seen Harry Potter should remember that story about when the woman came in and took over Hogwarts. This is kind of the same thing. It's like you have to teach in an approved method, you have to teach approved content, and you have to teach it when you do it. And I won't even get started about TeachGate, which is a huge document management system that is essentially a takeover, a state takeover of all school districts.
All right, Mike, and you've had a lot to say, and clearly you feel strongly about it, and we really appreciate your...
Yeah, I need
your,
to get off.
No, adding to our discussion today, we do need to go to a short break. I do want to let our listeners know we're talking about education issues today, if that was not obvious. We're talking about teacher evaluation and testing, and we're joined by Ellen Bernstein here in the studio, the president of the Albuquerque Teachers Federation, and Kirk Carpenter, the superintendent of Aztec New Mexico Schools. We'll get to our guest comments on that last call, as well as your calls and comments, which are many, as soon as we return.
Intelligence Squared U.S., where the world's leading thinkers debate today's most critical issues.
Now, why is the Second Amendment necessary?
There's a basic human right to self-defense.
There is no rational basis for that prohibition.
The Second Amendment, as written, is anachronistic.
The next topic up for debate, has the constitutional right to bear arms outlived its usefulness?
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
This Week in This American Life.
Yes, I'm looking for a one-bedroom apartment for me and my wife. Yes, uh-huh.
Have you possibly looked for a place to live lately? It's unpleasant, right?
I don't have nothing.
You don't have anything.
Okay, actually, that's a lie. The guy has places. The secret to get past him and others revealed this week.
Sunday afternoons at 4 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and we're talking about education issues today. I do want to get comments from the guests, but I do want to read this email comment. It may be something we can slip in and answer quickly because we have so much interest in this topic. Scott says he's heard that parents can opt out of new tests. Is this true, and how would parents go about doing this? And I'll add, what would be the benefit of that? So if we want to, let's just keep that on our plate. Let's go ahead and comment on that last caller right now.
Parents have always had the right to opt out.
You're on now.
Okay. Parents have always had the right to opt out of standardized testing. And I don't really know the process. I think they do it through the PED or possibly through their local school district. The issue, though, is part of the high-stakes testing is the A through F ratings of schools. And in the A through F law, if you have less than 95% of your student population taking the test, you automatically are lowered a grade level. Mm-hmm. And so parents who feel like high-stakes testing is bad for their child and they don't want them to participate, they have a lot of rights. The schools, however, might get dinged for it. So it's a very difficult.
Well, so far what I've heard is that the high-stakes testing benefits the school. The high-stakes testing can benefit the teacher in an evaluation. But does the high-stakes teaching benefit the student?
High-stakes doesn't benefit anybody. There is nothing wrong with a standardized test unless it's given high stakes and an inordinate amount of weight in terms of judging an entire school, an entire community, a teacher as an individual. There's nothing wrong with any of these things going on. When I started teaching in the 80s, I gave standardized tests to my third graders. But it wasn't a high-stakes situation. It was part of what we did. Kids didn't throw up. Kids didn't cry. Teachers didn't cry. We just prepared our kids to know how to take the test, and they took the test, and we got information at the end of the year, and we used it. It's the high stakes that are hurting the education system and everybody in it, including students.
Well, let's go ahead and bring our next caller in. It's Lynn from Santa Fe. Good morning, Lynn.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine.
I'm a retired testing administrator from the District of Santa Fe. And before I retired, I had to deal with the Scandera changes that were implemented. And what I found really interesting is that we have put a number of people who've never taught in a position to evaluate our teachers. And with that, they are not evaluating teachers. They have mathematical systems that will give you a number. And it really has very little to do with what's going on in the classroom, who are the students that these teachers are asked to teach, and it gives them no leeway. So I guess my question to the administrator is, was it ever discussed? Are there chances that these teachers will be evaluated with a sliding scale, let's say, for those students who have high absent rates, for those students who are non-English speakers but have been in the country for 3 years or more that are now forced to take the test in English? I'm not seeing anything except blatant numerical judgments so that they can say they've made changes.
All right. Thank you for your call this morning, Lynn. Superintendent Carpenter, go ahead and respond to that, if you would, please.
Well, I think it goes back to the same answer before. I mean, the idea behind value-added measures is to account for those types of kids and looking at a whole host of information. And I'm just not qualified to really tell you how that works because it's really a statistical calculation. And I would say, too, about the student achievement thing, if I can. In fairness to the system, it is based on growth. It's not a status score. So it's 3 years of data where possible. I'm not condoning, again, that 50% of what we're using student achievement to measure teacher effectiveness, because, again, I don't believe in that. I think student achievement information on this, just to add this short, quick point, is student achievement has a place in a continuum, maybe is to validate some things, look at teaching, but what's happening right now with our system is the student achievement piece is the main indicator of effectiveness, and that's not true. The main indicator of effectiveness should be the observations and the observations that are being done on a day-to-day basis in school buildings, and that, again, is what I've voiced and what I still contend with, and it's just a frustrating issue, and, again, not one that I think is going to change, and so we have to find ways to try to get this implemented, get answers to our staff as much as we can, and it is difficult because there's still a lot of things to be answered.
Susanna Sprague-Harris writes, how do we find out how much money is spent on the computer program to track teacher evaluations, TeacherScape? I think we need to follow the money to see who profits from teacher evaluations and testing. It is criminal that we allow corporations to tell us what our children need. Ellen Bernstein, you want to comment on that?
I think she's right. I think anytime you get reform that is imposed from the top down rather than a consensus model based on information from practitioners who are experts, then there's something going on. And there are many conversations going out on throughout the United States about what is going on financially that motivates the attack on public schools and the public school teachers. There, part of the conversation going on nationwide is if we continue to discredit professional teachers, if we get rid of the profession, if we undermine public confidence in the public schools, is that a door that opens for vouchers and privatization? Is there a way for us to turn our public schools into corporate schools, and then is there money to be made? And that conversation is so prevalent now that it should be a part of our public discourse. And what do we believe? I believe public schools are the foundation of a healthy democracy and that this is undermining our future as a country. People should be talking about this.
Well, Kirk Carpenter, I'm curious because I hear this all the time from people, as Ellen said. It is a conversation. Is there really a movement to advance corporate takeover of our schools or a push to rid states of public schools? Has there been discussion of that issue amongst the council members?
No discussion on that. I think what we've tried to do as council members, and again, I commend all the people on the council because they've really spent a lot of time and effort, is tried to focus on how we can implement a system. And it's been said, implement a new system where we can benefit and do something for our teachers instead of to. And unfortunately, with the implementation timeline, as you've heard, with there's a lot of fear and a lot of concern, a lot of questions that teachers feel like this is something being done to them. And once we get this implemented and go forward and we can and hopefully get past some of this, hopefully down the road we'll see some value to it. But again, with some changes I'd love to see, but I'm not sure that's going to happen. But no discussion about corporate takeover or anything like that. Our focus has been honestly and truly on how we can benefit students in New Mexico first through this system to help teachers improve and help principals give them the ability to recognize and approve good teaching.
I do want to let our listeners know one final time that we did invite Secretary Designate Hannah Scandera of the Public Education Department onto the program several times, including at the end of last week for this date, and she was unable to appear, but we decided that the issue was important enough. We went ahead with the discussion with our knowledgeable guests. Let's go ahead and bring in Ted from Peña Blanca. Good morning, Ted.
Hello. I hope you can understand me. I have a very bad voice, and sometimes it doesn't carry. I'm glad that people have begun to express support for teachers, classroom teachers. I've, as a professional psychotherapist for my entire life, I've listened for the last 30 years to all of these academic and marketing cliches that come from administrators and the testing industry in regard to the progress or lack of progress in the classroom. And always the teacher is blamed. And I have had a different view of the situation in three different states, Texas, California, and New Mexico, both privately and institutionally. And the responsibility starts with parents. Parents, regardless of their financial situation or their social situation, are negligent. And that is why students are having a difficult time or are completely failing. When I think about how teachers are maligned, I have to confess that I get very agitated. Teachers must be defended, and the community, any community that cares about education and cares about students and cares about family, needs to come together in some forum that will begin to address the initial cause, the etiology of this entire problem, and it should not rest exclusively or formatively on administrators that are there to protect their jobs and rely on cheap cliches in order to do so.
Well, Ted, thank you so much for your call this morning. Let's just go ahead and move on to our next caller. We're still stacked up here. Let's take Brian from Albuquerque. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning. Over the course of my wait here, pretty much all of the things that I had wanted to comment on were addressed, but particularly the last caller who said basically what I think is that it's not just a teacher and a PED issue. It directly affects the students and the parents, and I'm with the last caller. I'd call for parents and the community to show their support. It's not just an attack on teachers. It's an attack on the social program of teaching. It's not a business. It's not a stimulus response. It's a program. And I'm furious because I'm a parent of 2 6-year-olds and a teacher, and my kids' learning is being boiled down to a test.
Hmm. Well, thank you for your call this morning, Brian. You wanted to comment, Ellen?
Well, I think that's an important thing to bring into the conversation is by attaching high stakes to very narrow and limited tests, we have, since No Child Left Behind, and in particular with these high stakes in the evaluation system and the A through F grading system, this is well documented. We narrow the program that students are able to take advantage of. So instead of teaching a well-rounded education program to all students who deserve rich, complex, interesting activities so that they can all grow and learn, we create these drill, skill, kill programs because there's some misguided belief that if you just focus on language arts and math and you just drill, 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 kids will test better and it will then reflect better on everybody. And what you're really doing is cheating the children because they need a well-rounded education and they deserve it.
Well, Superintendent Carpenter, I keep coming back to the fact that we've had this system implemented. It's been implemented by executive order. The teachers don't like it. Most of them would love to see it go away. But you say it's not going away. You wanted it to be implemented in steps. That was your position. It wasn't. What can teachers and parents and, frankly, administrators do now?
Well, I think a lot of them are doing it. I mean, they're trying to make their voice heard. And again, it's not a situation where even in Aztec we're giving up. But we're gearing up because we're going to continue to advocate for staff, but we're not going to put all our cards there because I, again, have had face-to-face conversations this past summer in a superintendent's meeting. I stood up again and said, we need to slow this down. Can we make the implementation in steps? And no sooner than I said that, I know the secretary, there was another session that had begun, and she made it very clear in that session that we are not slowing down implementation, that it's going to go forward. And for that reason, you know, we continue to advocate. I continue to express my points. I think they probably have my own little email account up there because I'm constantly trying to ask questions, get clarification, sending communication about concerns and issues, and we'll continue to do that. But I think what's happening with teachers getting their voices out and to be heard, same with parents, is the next step. What I am saying is that from the people that have put this in place, they've made it very clear that it's not slowing down. So I take that at face value and say, okay, in that case, I'm going to still advocate for it, but we're also going to do everything we can to try to help our staff prepare for it as we are implementing so that, again, hopefully we can keep things from going down to the classroom level, and that's very difficult for the very reasons that have been mentioned on this show.
Well, and Ellen Bernstein, before I get to you, and we're not going to get to this caller, but I'm looking at the headline, and it says people are leaving the profession in droves. Is there any sense on the part of the administration, whether it's PED or the governor, that that's in fact happening or going to happen? So, Superintendent?
I don't think it's not going to happen. I mean, it's just, I haven't had opportunity or our committee in any way opportunity to really to meet with the governor. But in all communication from what we've been given, this is being implemented. Yes, there's no perfect system. Yes, we are developing things as we move along this school year. They're trying to meet some deadlines so that hopefully by after the first of the year we can have some things in the hands of teachers so they can see more of what the system is. But what has been communicated very clearly is nothing slowing. This implementation is going to happen. It's going to be done this year. And a lot of premise behind that is they feel like taking any part of this away of the evaluation system is trying to slow down the progress to benefit our students in the classrooms. And no matter how I point out that the real value of what's going to change, again, goes back to the actual observation piece. They've made it very clear the train's left the station and it's not going to slow down.
Well, and Ellen Bernstein, didn't the train leave partly because things were promised that hadn't even been implemented by law, like we will spend X amount of percentage on testing, things like that?
Yeah.
Go ahead and finish up.
My opinion is that the reason this is on the fast track is because this is about slogan reform that is intended to pad political resumes and not about the students in the classroom. There are victims of slogan reform, and the victims in this case, especially new teachers who are every day being proportionately identified as not doing well. Duh, they're new teachers and they're learning. But mostly it's the students because teacher churn or teacher turnover hurts kids, and that's what's happening.
And that's the bottom line. Thanks to our guest, Albuquerque Teachers Federation President Dr. Ellen Bernstein and Aztec New Mexico School Superintendent Kirk Carpenter. We asked Senator Gay Kernan to step out because we felt we couldn't do justice to her position with the liveliness of the conversation going on. Thanks for callers for helping to develop our discussion today. Apologies to those we did not get to. Thank you, guests. Thanks to our engineer, Jeff White. We have had our phones handled today by Andy Lyman. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show on KUNM News and Music That Connect from the University of New Mexico.